Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT on this Friday, February the 16th of 2018. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett alongside Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. We are coming to you from the home radio booth at the Compton Family Ice Arena on the campus of the University of Notre Dame, where tonight the top-ranked Irish hockey team will take on number 18, Michigan, in Big Ten hockey action. It's a home-and-home series we play in Ann Arbor on Sunday at 5:30. Both games can be heard on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, Yost Ice Arena, right next to Schembechler Hall, and right next to the baseball stadium, and just within shouting distance of Chrysler Arena and that little football stadium. Doesn't hold many people there, I hear.
And not too far from where Dalen Hayes went to high school at Ann Arbor Skyline High.
We'll go by and say hello to all the folks there.
Too bad it's not a Skyline Chili instead of a Skyline High School.
That would make it even better, no question. Well, we are glad that you're joining us here on this Friday, and we're going to talk some Notre Dame basketball in our opening segment. Also coming up at the bottom of the hour, we are bringing back Ask Sports Beat, where you can ask anything you want in the world of sports, and Eric and I will answer those questions. And, well, we've got something for you, because one of the individuals who phone in with a question or comment will pick up 2 tickets to Monday night's Notre Dame men's basketball game against the Miami Hurricanes. And that game will tip off at 7 o'clock. So your chance to win 2 tickets to Monday night's Notre Dame men's basketball game coming up at the bottom of this hour at 5:30 with Ask Sports Beat. We'll take your phone calls. You ask a question. You go into the drawing. We'll draw a name. And someone will win tickets to go see the Irish and the Hurricanes Monday night. So you've got some time to think of questions right now before we get to the segment at the bottom of the hour.
Please, no romance questions. I had one of those in the live chat Wednesday, and it wore me out.
So you're done.
I'm done.
Done with that.
And I haven't heard how it worked out. I told Tony from Brooklyn that he needed to email me how that went. So he's either in the doghouse or things are going well, because I have not heard from him.
When you read Tony from Brooklyn's question in your head, did you hear the New York Brooklyn accent from Tony?
I absolutely did.
You almost have to, yo.
Yeah, I can't get it right either way.
Well, hopefully it worked out. You've not heard anything, so that could be a bad sign. Poor Tony, we feel for you, man. Hang in there. So we'll have Ask Sports Beat at the bottom of the hour. My 5 question of the day. Who were the 5 best offensive linemen of the Harry Heaston era? You got a lot to choose from.
And there's some really good ones, but I thought the slotting was pretty easy. I was able to do it without a great debate there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will Quentin Nelson be number one? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe he'll go with an offensive tackle. We'll see. Next hour, Sean Stiers will be at Mishawaka High School, where he is preparing for Mishawaka Cayman basketball tonight on WSBT Radio as they take on the John Glenn Falcons at 7:30. We'll talk more Irish basketball. Mike Bray talked very highly of John Mooney yesterday. You'll hear from Mike and also John himself. John's going to talk about himself a little bit, as he has been shooting the ball extremely well over his last 8 games from 3-point line, 22 of 32, 68%. Kaboom. That'll work.
Let me ask you something about Mooney real quick. Were you here when Garrity played? Pat Garrity?
No, but I remember watching him on TV.
Okay, just curious if you think that Mooney could evolve into that kind of player.
I mean, my first gut is, Garrity was an NBA player.
He was an NBA player. I don't know that he started out that way. And there wasn't the terminology of stretch four when he played. He was one of the early stretch fours. Now, the thing about Garrity's game is he was really good inside and he was really good outside. So he was a very difficult matchup for people. And 6'9", mm-hmm. could nail the threes, but he could really take you inside. And so it was difficult. If you put a short, quick guy on him, he could post up. If you put some length on him, he'd take you outside, get you away from the basket. And he was a great leader. So it'll be interesting. I mean,
maybe a poor man's Garrity.
Yeah. I think he was 2-time Big East Player of the Year. He was fantastic.
Defensively,
he was okay. You know, he wasn't. They tried to hide him because they did not want him to get in foul trouble, so they'd hide him in a zone, and they would put Derek Manner. I don't know if you remember Derek. He was a 6'5 kid, and he was a defensive whiz, and they could afford to put him on the best player. So he played like he went after Rip Hamilton with UConn and did a great job on him. So that's kind of how they played that, to keep Garrity in the game, keep him from getting worn out, so that he could do his magic on the offensive end.
Could you share the story of the extra effort it took to get Pat Garrity into basketball shoes that actually fit him and felt good?
Yeah, it was kind of funny because I think it was the beginning of the Adidas contract or near the beginning, and they got some new shoes on their team. And every player on the team was complaining about their feet and legs hurting with this model of shoe, so they brought in some different Adidas shoes, and it was similar results. And it finally got to the point where everybody was okay with them except for Garrity. He was having shin splints and all kinds of problems, and John McLeod was the coach at the time. He said, we can't have this. So
right.
He went to Adidas, and he went to the athletic director, who I believe was Kevin White at the time, and he said, look, we can't have him wearing Adidas shoes. And so they let him wear Nike shoes, both in practice and in games. But I was noticing in the very first game that the Nike swoosh stripe was gone. Somebody had taken white out and whited out the Nike symbol. So they just like look like generic white shoes. And I and Garrity was a little bit taken aback by it. I said, hey, Pat, how did the swoosh stripe disappear? He goes, I guess it was the shoe fairy.
Great answer.
he was great to cover. I mean, the 2 years I covered Notre Dame basketball, there were just some really interesting individuals, and John McLeod was one of them. I know that, you know, he didn't bring Notre Dame back to prominence the way that Mike Bray has, but he kind of set the table with his last mm-hmm. batch of recruits. Murphy, Graves, Swanigan, and then Matt Carroll and Mike Monsaray were in the junior class. So he left Matt Doherty and Mike Bray some players that kind of started it all.
No Nike swoosh. The Tooth Fairy took it away.
Yeah.
Great story. Eric and Darren with you. Sports Beat 514 on this Friday evening. Do want to mention it is opening day for Mick Aoki's Fighting Irish baseball team. They are down in Baton Rouge to take on former Notre Dame head coach Paul Menares, nationally ranked LSU Tigers. They will put the ball in motion at 8 o'clock tonight, and I know the baseball team had some troubles getting out of Midway yesterday. Hopefully they got down to Baton Rouge in decent time, because once they arrive, from what we understand, the weather's awfully nice down there at LSU.
84 degrees this afternoon down there. Oh. The LSU beat writers were tweeting that, and I was just going, okay, well, you know, I don't have a comeback for that.
First pitch, is it jacket weather?
It's going to be in the 70s, so maybe it's jacket weather for them. Maybe that's freezing cold for them.
All right, so good luck to the Irish baseball team. First of three against LSU tonight at 8 o'clock. And I'll preview Notre Dame hockey next hour. But the Irish, once again, ranked number one in the country, Big Ten regular season champions, taking on their arch rivals, Michigan.
Here we can get back at them. LSU doesn't have a hockey team, I'm pretty sure.
They do not. They might have a club team. A lot of teams have club teams.
Right.
But I don't know about LSU. Alabama Huntsville has a Division I hockey
That's
team.
True.
So Huntsville's more powerful than LSU, I guess. But Michigan in town, the Irish are 2-0 against the Wolverines this year. Both 2-1 victories, one in Ann Arbor, one in South Bend. Tonight's game will start at 7:35. You can hear it on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. This will be the 138th all-time meeting between Notre Dame and Michigan on ice.
How about that?
And Jordan Gross, Notre Dame's outstanding defenseman, will play his 150th consecutive game tonight. And he started his first game of his career and has not missed a game, knock on wood.
I got a question for you.
I have answers.
Okay.
You'll get into the drawing for the tickets. You're asking SportsBeat.
With there being only four regular season games left, correct?
Yes, sir.
Do you, and somebody asked me this question, I didn't have an answer. Do you?
You got asked hockey questions?
I did get asked a hockey question. I was driving friends around, and we were looking at the different athletic facilities. It was too cold to walk it. But they said, does the backup goalie get some time at this point of year? Do you put St. Cyr in to get him ready in case there was an injury to Cale Morris in the tournament, in case he had a bad day? Or do you just always play your number one guy?
He actually had a chance to play last Saturday.
Yes.
As the game got out of hand, we didn't play very good in front of Cale, and so St. Cyr got some time in the last part of the game.
Dylan St. Cyr, right?
Dylan St. Cyr, okay. Correct. Yes, so he got a little playing time, but you ride your horse.
Okay.
If you recall, Cal Peterson started his last 90 games of his career at Notre Dame, one of the all-time longest streaks in Division I history.
And this is because there's just not as many games as an NHL season. Okay,
correct.
Gotcha.
You play Thursday, Friday normally. I'm not a fan of these Friday, Sunday matchups. And actually, I've talked to a lot of people. I haven't found one person that likes it. So you lose a day of rehab. You lose a practice day because you're not going to practice hard on Saturday in between the games. So normally you play Friday, Saturday, rehab Sunday, practice. You can practice Monday or Tuesday, and here you lose a practice day. And this is our third Friday, Sunday of the second half.
At least they didn't move it to Yankee Stadium, Derek.
Gosh. Send your emails and comments to Eric Hansen. That's E.
Oh,
Hansen.
That wasn't nice, was it?
You're on fire. I'm just going to let you go. Okay. That one's all yours. I'm just going to focus on hockey.
I was thinking of Tony from Brooklyn when I said that.
You're the Fighting Irish football insider, so you'll handle the football comments, and I'm just going to let that one walk on by and tell the folks that Mark D'Antonio got an extension today from Michigan State through 2024.
That is beyond shocking to me just because of the whole ESPN report. It looked like both he and Mark and Tom Izzo were in trouble, but the interim president, John Engler, gave him an extension and said a lot of wonderful things about Mark D'Antonio, all of which may be true. It just seems like you might want to get a little bit deeper into this investigation before you do that. So Michigan State is pushing back on the ESPN reporting. Both John Engler and recently retired AD Mark Hollis have said that there was some misleading reporting in this. ESPN stands by their reporting. I saw the letter that Mark Hollis wrote to employees that was forwarded to the media. It didn't say specifically what he found misleading, I don't think. So this is going to get interesting because, again, Michigan State is now pushing back. You know, they feel like they've been transparent, but they feel like ESPN has kind of overstepped things.
This decision is either really smart, really arrogant, or really stupid. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Interesting decision up at Michigan State. Irish basketball team at Boston College tomorrow at 4 o'clock on 96.1 FM WSBT. The Eagles are 16-10 overall, 6-7 in the ACC, coming off a win earlier this week over a bad Pittsburgh team on the road. The Irish playing in Chestnut Hill, where Boston College has beaten this year the Duke Blue Devils, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, the Miami Hurricanes, and the Florida State Seminoles. So they have played really good basketball against good teams in their facility this season. Now, it should be pointed out the Irish have had excellent success against BC since joining the ACC. Notre Dame is a perfect 9-0 against the Eagles. And, of course, 10 days ago, the Irish beat Boston College at home 96-85. T.J. Gibbs buried five trifectas. He scored a career-high 28. And then Jerome Robinson set the Purcell Pavilion record with a 46-point effort for Boston College. Mike Bray, the head coach of the Fighting Irish, mentioned yesterday it's not going to be just Rex Pfluger guarding Robinson tomorrow. It'll be a smorgasbord of Irish being thrown at Robinson, trying to keep guys a little more fresh as they try to slow him down in the second meeting of the year. Now, during Mike Bray's press conference yesterday, he told us that freshman DJ Harvey, who suffered a bone bruise to the left knee January 16th against Louisville, was going to practice yesterday and hopefully practice today. And if all goes well, he will be active for the Boston College game tomorrow. So really good news for the Fighting Irish as they get another injured part back into the rotation. And we had a couple of moments to hear from DJ Harvey yesterday.
Too long.
Yeah.
Too long. But it's been like a month, about 4 weeks. Yeah, been out, not playing. Feels good to be back.
What do you think? Where's your stamina and your conditioning? Are you going to find that out here the next few days?
Oh, well, the first day back, Monday, it was rough. But, you know, been working out with T-Row with my conditioning. I feel like I'm coming along well.
How tough was it sitting out and knowing they need points, they need guys to make shots, and you couldn't help them during that time?
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough sitting on the bench, but I knew, like, I had to support my guys. And I tried the best I could on the bench, trying to support coach, you know, instill confidence in my guys like they do with me.
How bad was it when you went down against Louisville? Like, did you fear it was more serious than what it was?
Yeah, I definitely felt like it was serious, like, because I tried to turn. And, like, usually when you try to turn, that's when things, like, happen. And then, you know, when everybody else said, like, they thought it was, like, MCL, ACL, I was feeling the worst. But, you know, luckily I just came out with a bone bruise.
No matter how many years you play, the first game of the season always is strange and difficult. You think it's going to feel that way for you on Saturday?
Well, it's going to take a little getting used to, but, you know, I've been playing, you know, one-on-one with TJ and Coach EA, so I feel like I should be fine.
What's your excitement level, your eagerness to get back out there?
I'm super excited. Like, you know, it's been a long time since I've played a college basketball game, and I've just been super excited to come back and play.
What do you think you can get to this team out of the gate after not playing for a while here?
I feel like I can give, you know, scoring, rebounding, defense. You know, probably not going to get much minutes if I'm able to play Saturday, just due to probably condition-wise and just not trying to force things all the way. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
It's a temptation to try to do too much, and like you said, you're probably not going to get 25 minutes, yeah, per se. Temptation there to try to do a little bit too much.
Yeah, I'm just trying to go out there and do my game. You know, what I've been doing. You know, I don't need to go out there and just try to force the issue. I know that it's going to take some getting used to. So, you know, just looking forward to it.
Obviously, you never want to get injured, and there's never really a good time. But did it feel like that was just, you know, really hard for you to, you know, to kind of go through that right after, you know, 2-3 games you had been really kind of coming on?
Yeah, most definitely. And then, you know, like, I was getting a lot of minutes, you know, injuries, you know, have forced me to step up, getting a lot of minutes. And then just that period, you know, Matt was out, Bonzi was out. It just hurt that I got hurt at that same time. But, you know, I could have developed a lot more. And, well, you know, just sitting out was just never fun.
DJ Harvey, Fighting Irish freshman, fingers crossed he plays tomorrow. To me, he's an 8 to 14-minute guy tomorrow. You get as much as you can out of DJ Harvey tomorrow. But I think, to a point, Coach Bray also has to think about his offense has found a little rhythm the last couple of ball games. They found that mojo once again. DJ hasn't played since January 16th. How well is he going to fit in with everybody that kind of has that good feeling right now? I mean, there's going to be an adjustment. It's probably not going to be smooth right away. And I'm not saying don't play him, but I wonder if Mike thinks about, boy, I don't want to mess with the rotation too much because I finally got this offense going. It's almost good that maybe DJ can't go a whole lot tomorrow. The temptation might be to play him a little more.
Yeah.
Am I off base?
Well,
am I overthinking it?
Maybe a little bit. I'm not sure you want to give Austin Torres 18 minutes.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. Not at all.
Yeah, because I think that's whose time will get eaten away a little bit on this.
I was thinking maybe Jogo would lose some time possibly with Harvey back. That's the direction I was going.
Right, right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I would think, you know, just depending on how they want to match up against Boston College, you would think he'd even maybe be a guy that took a turn on Jerome Robinson for a little bit.
Could, if he's feeling good.
Yeah.
If he's feeling good. So what do the Irish need to do to win on the road? Folks, it has been since January 6th at Syracuse since the Irish celebrated in a visiting locker room. So, Mike Bray, what do you guys need to do tomorrow to leave Chestnut Hill with a victory?
Well, we're going to have to score. You know, I mean, the one thing about these guys last time, we were able to score because they're really gifted offensively and they're very good at home. Hopefully we can hold a guy, you know, under 48 this time or 46 or whatever it is. But we're going to have to score and get into an offensive rhythm. You know, we'll put Johnny back in the starting lineup for Saturday. He started the second half, and hopefully he can keep giving us a punch offensively. And then you just hope you can keep that perimeter from not scorching you too bad Saturday afternoon.
And that falls back to Jerome Robinson scoring 46 against the Irish 10 days ago. So we're to that point of the season. It's not where we expected the Irish to be. The injuries have really changed the perspective. Start of the year was dream big. Making the tournament was basically something that was going to happen eventually just by the way they were going to play, and they were going to play well. And the injuries have obviously changed the complexion of this season. So now they're on the outside looking in to the NCAA tournament. They're now 5-8. In the ACC. They're not winning against teams with winning records, which does not help their resume. So, Mike Bray, is tomorrow a must win?
Well, I mean, you know, I think everything, we're in a territory now where we're going to have to start picking off a couple and get closer to 500 in the league if we're going to have any shot at getting a bid. And I talked to him about that. I said, you know, we have another Saturday, Monday turnaround. We've been 0-2 and 1-1. You know, maybe we can go 2-0 on this one. Maybe we're ready to do it because, you know, we're going to have to start doing some things to actually be realistically in the discussion.
So what do you think Mike was saying there?
Yes.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah, and really, I mean, if you're 5-8, you can't have your ninth league loss be to Boston College, whether it's at home or on the road.
Yep. So, finally, Mike Bray yesterday talked about the chances of his team making the NCAA tournament. What is the formula now? Give a listen.
You know, I mean, I've been, you know, I think they know we've got to make some kind of move toward 500 in this league before we go to Brooklyn, you know, to have a shot at getting in. And so, I mean, I was clear to them back when we started this back nine. You know, we're 2-2 on this back nine. And so they know exactly where we are. You know, you got to have a little bit more on the resume so Brooklyn. You know, if you go up there and you have to win Brooklyn, that's a heck of a steep climb, especially if you're playing on Tuesday, and which we're, you know, right now, unless we can make a move, we're going to play on Tuesday. So, you know, I always said if we could be 8-10, you know, this a month ago, if we could be 8-10 going to Brooklyn, we would still be in striking distance. And then if you can get a couple up there, not win it, with Bonzi back, you could sneak into this thing.
Do you think that getting Bonzi back will impact the selection committee?
Oh, no question. I mean, you know, now he'll have to show that he's productive. Sure. Maybe not a 20-17 guy, but there's no question. I mean, I think him coming back and being able to show him as a contributing guy, especially, you know, with his numbers and his status, that would be helpful in that room. But we got to do more. We got to do more in the W column before we can use him as a character.
Well, I'll say this, Eric. When he speaks to the media, any coach is also sometimes speaking to his team. And he just can't say 9-9 right now is what they need to be. Because that means you have to win 4 in a row and you probably lose at Virginia to get to 9-9. So I think Mike has now brought up 8-10 just to, I think, try to calm his team a little bit, because they're out of mulligans.
Yeah.
I mean, they are at the point now of no turning back, and this is my opinion. I'm not a committee person, but at 8-10, and with the inability to beat teams with winning records in the ACC, I believe they're 1-8, even if you get Bonzi back, that's going to be very difficult to overcome. You lost to Ball State. You lost to Indiana. And those are two teams that won't make the NCAA tournament. Indiana! That's right. And Ball State's going to have to win the MAC to get in. So you lost to a couple of non-tournament teams in the non-conference season.
Did have the nice win against Wichita State.
That's the feather in their cap right now. But I just think, Eric, 8-10 without the quality of victories in the ACC might be difficult to overcome.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the bubble real close.
It'll sink.
Yeah.
It always does.
But I think 9-9 is realistic.
Yes.
And Bonzi playing in at least a game and looking good in that. It's the timing of him coming back is going to be really interesting if he plays against Virginia, for example, or if his first games are in the tournament in Brooklyn.
Well, you lose to BC tomorrow. That means you're going to have to beat Virginia on the road.
Not happening.
With all the games you got to play in the ACC to get to the semifinal, that's going to take a lot of work and energy. Yeah. And is this team deep enough? And, you know, Bonzi playing 4 days in a row, is that something that's good at this point?
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor. I have no idea. But something to think about. Irish, BC, tomorrow, 4 o'clock on WSBT Radio. It is 5:32. Coming up next, we're going to ask SportsBeat. Let's open up the phone lines right now. You can jump aboard and get on hold and be one of the first person to get on the air with your sports-related question. We'll answer it. You can call us right now at 574-282-2696. We're talking Irish football, Irish basketball, Irish hockey. If you want to go Major League Baseball, NFL, we're ready for anything. If you want to talk about the Raging Cajuns, we'll try to talk about the Raging Cajuns. Not sure what we're going to give you, but 574-282-2696. The phone lines are yours next. And again, one person who phones in wins tickets to go see Notre Dame and Miami at Purcell Pavilion Monday night in men's college basketball action. So give us a call right now, 574-282-2696. SportsBeat on 96.1 FM WSBT. Along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune, I'm Darren Pritchett. We are live at the Compton Family Ice Arena, where we're going to play a little hockey tonight. Notre Dame and Michigan. Even if they're playing chess, that's exciting. Checkers. It's always extra exciting, and it's a whiteout today. You get a T-shirt and you get a pom-pom today to cheer on your Fighting Irish.
What do you get at the checkers match with Michigan and Notre Dame?
Eric, you're asking a lot of questions today.
Okay. I'll let the callers do that. That's what we're here for now.
That's right. Ask SportsBeat, where you take over the program. We'll answer your questions and comments. 574-282-2696. At the end of the segment or before the end of the hour, we'll draw one name from all the people who phoned in, and they win two tickets to go see Notre Dame men's basketball against Miami Monday night at 7 o'clock. So let's get started. We're going to go to Goshen first and say hello to Brad. Hello, Brad. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. I love the sunshine, so it's got to be a good day, right?
It feels good, doesn't it?
It does. I've got a question regarding the NFL draft. Everything I have seen has got Sam Darnold going number one. This is a guy who had 25 turnovers this past year. What am I missing?
Well, I think what they're looking at with Sam is his upside. He didn't have the turnover problem the previous season and looked really, really good. But I would be concerned about that because that's one of the reasons they're pushing DeShone Kizer to the back burner is because of the turnovers. Big, strong arm. His game translates well to the NFL game. He played in more of an NFL-type offense. But I would be concerned about it. But let me ask you this. Who do you like better among those first-round quarterbacks?
Boy.
Because they all seem to have their flaws.
Yeah, there isn't that near-perfect quarterback in this group. Everybody's got
There's no Andrew Luck.
Absolutely.
Right. And I guess that's what I'm saying. I mean, I heard all these guys talking about, I've heard them all talking about how deep the quarterback class is. I'm not sure that there's anybody that would be that at least right now, I mean, maybe Sam's upside is higher than I think it is. To be honest with you, I thought when they played Notre Dame, he looked really average. And
he did.
I don't know who you would pick first. I guess the Browns have the first pick. I don't know why they wouldn't be trying to get some offensive linemen. I'd be after Nelson. I mean, Quentin, to be honest with you.
If I were Cleveland, and I don't follow the pros as much, so this may sound really silly, but I'd trade down and take one of the other quarterbacks and get more picks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I'd love to be able to get Barkley. I'd love to be able to get an offensive lineman. I'd love to be able to get Minka Fitzpatrick. And if you could parlay that number one pick into another pick in the first round, I know they have two in the first round. I want to say three in the second round. So they've got some. They're going to get some good players as long as they don't mess it up. But I do wonder, is Sam Darnold that much better than Josh Allen, that much better than Josh Rosen? You know, I think when you get into Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, you're rolling the dice a little bit, and those guys could end up being better than all those three. But
yeah,
but if you got one of those three, you would think that, you know, that would be an upgrade over where DeShone Kizer was this year. I just think if you keep drafting quarterbacks and you don't draft players around them, are you ever going to get any better?
Well, they keep drafting the wrong one.
I mean
you can name all these quarterbacks they passed on the last few years.
But I thought near the end of the season, I didn't pay real close attention. I probably should have paid more attention. I was watching my fantasy teams, but I thought DeShone had a couple of really pretty decent games at the end of the season.
He was better. He did throw a lot of interceptions. The thing that he did really well is he ran the ball very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think you give up on him completely. I think you keep him on your roster and you see what you have in him, and maybe somebody wants to trade for him at some point. But he just went to such a bad into such a bad situation. But you know, him sitting behind somebody for a year, I don't know if that's the worst thing that can happen to him. But, yeah, Cleveland just needs so much.
And, Eric, we've talked about this before. We felt like Darnold this year was DeShone Kizer, his final year at Notre Dame. He lost
his
wide receivers, and the weight of the world was on DeShone Kizer's shoulders his last year.
Right.
And he pressed, and he struggled, and I think Darnold losing Schuster.
Yeah.
And
a lot of offensive linemen, because he had a really good line his sophomore year.
He had to do a lot, and I almost feel like there's some parallel between the two. But I think I've heard a discussion that Darnold doesn't have big hands either, and that's causing him to lose the football, like in the Notre Dame game, the first play that USC had last year. Tavon Coney knocked it away. So, I don't think there's a lock quarterback in this group. I worry about Mayfield not being from a pro offense. Those guys scare the heck out of me.
Yeah. I agree. They're really, really hyping Darnold. And I thought when they played Notre Dame, to be honest with you, I thought he looked very average. I just was not seeing what I guess everybody else did. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm sure not an NFL scout, but don't claim to be. But I looked at the turnovers number, and I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, do we really want to pick this guy? I mean,
Right.
All right. So, anyways, well, hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You bet. Brett, thanks for the phone call. Asking SportsBeat, if you have a question or comment, 574-282-2696. That's 574-282-2696. We don't have any callers on the line right now, so if you'd like to jump aboard, we have those tickets to Notre Dame Miami up for grabs right now. Brad would win a walk-off, unless someone gives us a buzz here over the next, we got about 5 or 6 minutes left at 574-282-2696. You got Rosen from UCLA. Very thin framed. I worry about how he's going to hold up. You got Allen from Wyoming, who Mike Varell, your colleague, had a chance to cover a little bit at Wyoming before he joined the South Bend Tribune. Mayfield's an exciting player, but again, I just worry about the offense that he's coming from at Oklahoma. Darnold, boy, you thought so differently of him after the previous year. He looked like a lock to be the number one pick of the 18 draft, but then, as you guys talked about, all the turnovers popped up. did not look confident at times. He didn't play well in the bowl game against Ohio State. So I think there is going to be a ton of drama at the top of the NFL draft with, as we know, so many teams in search of that next starting quarterback. You know, a lot of people thought Jameis Winston was going to be a can't-miss starting quarterback of the National Football League. And Eric, right now, I don't think he's really separated himself with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He has his moments. He's got a really good wide receiving core, but it has not worked out consistency-wise at the NFL level. Now, Carson Wentz made the big jump from his rookie year to this year, where he became an electrifying quarterback. It looks like he's going to fall into that category of being a guy that's going to be the starting quarterback for the Eagles for a long time, unless they all of a sudden trade him with Foles there. I can't believe they do that. Wentz is just too good. There's just so many holes in the NFL at the quarterback position. That's why Kirk Cousins will hit the jackpot with some team. The Redskins quarterback, he's available with Alex Smith going from Kansas City to Washington. Once we get into March and the new NFL season gets underway, that trade will become official. So Cousins is going to be a free agent, and you could see him getting $30 to $35 million. And I wouldn't call him a guy that's going to carry a franchise. But in today's NFL, Eric, I think he's kind of in that B category. And as a Bronco fan, I feel like he's a better choice than drafting one of these quarterbacks. You draft Quentin Nelson with number 5, and you sign Kirk Cousins, I think you look a whole lot better. Let's go to Dave from Elkhart. He's got a question about one of our favorite guys, Super Rex. Hello, Dave. How are you?
I guess your opinion is different than mine.
Uh-oh. Go ahead.
I just do not see it with him. He can't shoot. I mean, it's kind of, the guy's he's a tenacious defensive player, but he cannot shoot to save his life. His shooting form is horrible. I just don't see it.
Well, you know, the thing, Dave.
Well, that's not a question. That's his observation. So what's your question, Dave? Do we also think he's not see it? Yeah.
Would you rather
him
come off the bench?
I just wondered. He came in with, you know, all this athleticism, and I don't know how the guy keeps playing.
Well, he came to South Bend with offensive game that needed to go to the next level. And, hey, there is absolutely no doubt, Dave, he has been very inconsistent offensively. He went through a stretch during that 7-game losing streak. I remember he was 12 for 65 or 12 for 66 from the field. He's just one of those guys, Dave, that you look at the box score, he gets rebounds, assists, steals. You mentioned he's a great defender. And when the team was struggling offensively, I mean, it was tough at times to keep some of these guys on the floor. But now that they found their offensive rhythm, you can live and die a little bit more, I think, with Rex. But, you know, he's just one of those guys, Dave, does a lot for the team. You're right, the shooting is very inconsistent. But it's awfully hard to take him off the floor, considering Harvey's been out and the other options on the team. Go ahead, Eric.
I do understand that.
I thought his offensive game would evolve more, you know, as he went along. And when Farrell and Bonzi went out, you know, sometimes when your star players come out, you feel less inhibited about taking shots. And I think in the case of TJ Gibbs and maybe Harvey, that was the case with Rex. He seemed to be still kind of as hesitant, not as confident in his offensive game. And I'm not sure what the answer is there. I like him as an athlete. I like him as a defensive player. But his offensive game has got to grow. And we've seen that with players before. I mean, even when you look at Bonzi Colson, look how his game grew over the years.
CJ?
Yeah, absolutely. And so,
time's ticking, but...
Yeah, time's ticking, but I could see where you get a little bit of frustrated with D-Rex.
I do see the hesitation. You know, it looks like he's got an open shot, and he'll take a dribble, and then he's looking to pass. Maybe if he would just free himself up and just feel confident to take the shot, maybe he'd make a little bit more. I think the hesitation part is a big problem for him.
I think it is, too, and we've had him on the show a couple times, and both last year and this year, I asked him, I said, you know, how do you kind of find your rhythm with these, you know, outstanding offensive players around you? And that was when Farrell and Bonzi were both playing. And he said, I'm still kind of trying to figure that out. And I think maybe if he figures that out. You remember him saying that, Darren?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think maybe if he can kind of figure that part out, you know, where he fits in the offense, maybe that'll help with his confidence and with his execution.
All right. Hey, Dave, thanks for the phone call. We'll put your name into the drawing. You bet. Have a good evening. We'll have the drawing here in just a moment. Let's take one more phone call. And we go to Rory from South Bend, who has a Notre Dame football, I would say, historical question. And you have written books, Eric, about some of the history of Notre Dame football. So I think this is right down your alley. Rory, go right ahead.
Given that the Rockne and Lehigh's winning percentages were fairly close to each other, and given all the things that they accomplished as coaches, the championships, in other words, who do you think the better of the two coaches was?
Lehigh or Rockne? Wow,
that's a great question. I mean, Rockne's winning percentage is better. He also was the coach that put Notre Dame on the map, and he was quite an innovator. Where I really like Lehigh is, beyond being a really successful coach, he went to war for a couple of years. He was in World War II and then came back and coached the team. I mean, he was gone for 2 years. That's incredible. And then came back and was coaching at a high level. But I give the nod to Rockne because of his vision, because of his innovations to the game beyond just winning at a ridiculously high percentage. I give him the edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Very good.
Rory, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you. Thank you.
You bet. Did Newt find a way to beat Navy?
You know what? Yeah, they were playing Navy at that time. Yes, they were playing Navy, and he did find a way to beat Navy.
Did he find a way to beat that flight school from Iowa?
Iowa pre-flight? I'm not sure that they... I think that was Leahy's era that they were playing. I think Newt played, like, Indiana Apothecary or something like
Who'd
that.
Who'd they play?
Indiana Apothecary. I mean, some of the pre-Rockne opponents were crazy. I mean, they were playing like high schools and small colleges and so forth, but college football hadn't kind of sorted out yet at that point.
We thank you for the phone calls, and I'm going to have my daughter Logan draw the winner here in just a couple of moments. So we'll tell you who wins in just a couple of moments, okay? We'll take a timeout. My five question of the day next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Before we get to the question, the winner of the tickets is Rory. Rory from South Bend wins the tickets to go to Notre Dame and Miami at Purcell Pavilion Monday night. You can hear the game on WSBT Radio, so... Thanks for all the phone calls. Wish we had three sets of tickets, but Rory was our winner. Now to our question, the five best offensive linemen of the Harry Hiestand era. We begin with number five.
I feel like I'm talking about cuts of steak here because they're all really good. And I'm going to go with Nick Martin at number five. He played a little guard, played some center, was a second-round draft choice of the Houston Texans. Nick Martin.
Number four.
Unanimous All-American from this, I'm not unanimous, consensus All-American from this year, Mike McGlinchey, started out as a right tackle, moved over to left tackle, was a two-year starter there. And I think that's a good spot for Mike. And being number four on this list is no downgrade.
I'm looking at your list. Heavy hitters here. Best five offensive linemen of the Harry Hiestand era, number three.
Mike McGlinchey's predecessor at left tackle, Ronnie Stanley, who was a top six draft pick a few years ago. Again, McGlinchey, Stanley, and some other of these folks all played together at one time. Nick Martin, I think, did too. So, wow, there's some really good offensive linemen here.
No question. Number two.
This one was splitting hairs a little bit. Zach Martin, I don't think, got anywhere near the recognition that he deserved nationally when he was at Notre Dame. I voted for him as a second-team All-American in 2013, and he should have been probably a first-team All-American on my ballot. But he didn't get even honorable mention. Ends up going to the NFL, has been an All-Pro ever since, but maybe one of the more overlooked players to play in Notre Dame and in the post-Holtz era.
And the best offensive lineman of the Harry Heastand era better be Quentin Nelson, or he's going to find you and shake you.
He's going to find me, shake me, and throw me like a megaphone. It is Quentin Nelson. It's really interesting to see how much love he's getting for the pre-NFL draft. He's pretty much the consensus number two prospect in the draft. That doesn't mean he would be drafted second, because right. quarterbacks have higher value. But if, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. It looks more and more like a lock to be in the top 10.
That's our My Five question of the day. We'll take a short break. What's in the Tribune next on WSBT?
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom Noy has a column on a guy that I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to get the right name. Holly Cross guard, Mishawaka grad, Tegan Schultheis. We have a story from Mike on Anthony Fasano, former Notre Dame tight end, opening an addiction treatment center. Notre Dame and Boston College men's hoop notebook. We have Quinn Carroll visiting, a big-time offensive lineman in Notre Dame recruiting. Lots of high school basketball, Notre Dame-Michigan hockey, much, much more.
Very good. Enjoy your weekend.
You too.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Here we go, hour number two of the program. From 96.1 FM, WSBT, Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Sean Stiers at Mishawaka High School. At the Cave, getting set for a night of Mishawaka Caveman basketball against the John Glenn Falcons, 7:30 tip or thereabouts on 96.1 FM, WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett from the Compton Family Ice Arena, where Notre Dame hockey, ranked number one in the country, will take on number 18 Michigan at 7:35. You can hear the game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. It's a whiteout night. You'll get a T-shirt and a pom-pom when you arrive at the Compton tonight. It is sold out except for standing room only. So there is room for you tonight to watch some outstanding Big Ten hockey between two rivals that will play for the 138th time tonight, the Irish and the Wolverines. Sean, how are things at Mishawaka High School tonight?
Just starting to warm up with the junior varsity game. So it's actually, you're talking about whiteout night there. It is organ donor night. Here, the new head coach, Ron Heklinski, received a liver 21 years ago, so he is really into getting people to register as donors and things like that, and so people can do that here tonight, make any donations to the Indiana Donor Registry and that kind of thing. So that's going on here tonight at the Cave.
Well, things are warming up there. Things are cooling off here. They just turned the air conditioning on the last 20 minutes because it got cold all of a sudden here in the building. So that must mean game time is right around the corner in about an hour and a half on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. And Mishawaka coming off a victory over Wawasee the other night, 41-31. We'll get some more insight on the Mishawaka-John Glenn matchup from Sean in just a little bit. But we have basketball action tomorrow on WSBT Radio at 4 o'clock. It is Notre Dame at Boston College. The Eagles 16-10, 6-7 in the ACC. The Irish are 5-8 in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Now, we do know that John Mooney will be in the starting lineup for the Irish. Dealt with an ankle injury for a couple of games. Looks like that's beyond him now, as he was 6-for-6 down at Carolina shooting threes. And Mike Brace said yesterday that John will be in the starting lineup, so he will replace Austin Torres in the starting five for Notre Dame tomorrow in Chestnut Hill. And shooting the three ball has, well, it's been pretty easy for John Mooney lately. Last four games, he is 14 of 20 for 70%. His last eight games, 22 of 32, 68.7%. In those eight games, he has six games with two or more three-point field goals, five games with three or more three-point field goals, and again against Carolina, 6 for 6 from the three-point line, 18 points, and now in the starting lineup for Boston College. It's really interesting to watch John Mooney. He has the most interesting hitch in his shot. He puts the ball above his head, and there's like a little stop and a twist, and then he releases the basketball. I'm not sure how he got to that particular form. It's been very effective.
Works
but
for
him. It sure does. But I think more than anything else, he releases the ball so high that even those Carolina players that were in his face, they couldn't block his shot. So
that's true.
The hitch is a little different, but I think where he releases the basketball really helps him as a three-point shooter.
That has to do, it probably does have a lot to do with it, that and the fact that he's 6'9" as well, but because he is holding it up so there, even as you said, because Carolina does have so much length, a lot more than BC's going to have tomorrow, but that didn't really think about it until you said that, but that probably does come into play quite a bit, the way he holds it up there and kind of cocks it and goes with it.
So Mooney's in the starting lineup. So that moves Torres back to the bench. You got DJ Harvey, barring a setback yesterday or today in practice, will be on the active roster. May only play 8, 12, 13 minutes of the game, but that's another body. Eric and I were talking about this in the first hour of the program. With Harvey coming back, and again, it's not going to be a lot of minutes, you would expect. Who do you think loses playing time with Harvey returning, and Mooney's healthy again, so he's going to get his full allotment of playing time. Do you think it's Jogo that all of a sudden sees a reduction in minutes, or do you have to keep him out there for maybe 8, 9, 10 minutes, just trying to keep him ready for the stretch run because he might be needed, because as we know, the injury bug continues to hit this team.
Yeah, I would think that he will. He played 12 minutes against Boston College last time. He played 10 minutes the other night against North Carolina. I would think that his would drop off, and probably even Burns will see his cut back, since, as Mike Bray has talked about, DJ Harvey can do a little of both. He can play that four position a little bit and stretch the floor because of his three-point shooting ability, kind of like Mooney. But so I would think that, just depending on how healthy, how much Harvey can go, I would think both of them would see a little bit of a drop, but probably more even specifically Jogo, just because of the fact that he is a little bit more of a shooter, I guess, than Burns.
And I guess, Sean, at this point, it's not like Jogo has been, I guess, a consistent performer on offense. It's not like he has given them consistent bursts offensively, so I feel like he's just one of those guys that hasn't figured it out yet. We see it in shooting situations in practice. He knocks down threes very, very easily. It just has not translated to the game. And without the productivity right now, it just seems like to me that he's a guy that could lose a few minutes with the return of DJ Harvey. Now, going back to Mooney, the way he's been shooting the basketball, Mike Bray very excited to have him in the starting lineup tomorrow against Boston College. And Mike, during his media session yesterday, spent a couple of moments answering questions about John Mooney and that interesting release.
No, we didn't touch it. Yeah, we didn't really want to touch it. I mean, you know, it's one of those things when he got here in the summer, you know, we watched him through his senior year, and then he got here, you know, he shot it well with that, and so you just didn't want to mess with it. You know, the thing he obviously needs to work on is free throw shooting. You know, that's something that has haunted him a little bit this year, not only Monday night, but, you know, the stroke is good, and he'll be fine from the line once he gets settled and a little more confident there. But, yeah, he's one of those guys, you just don't want to talk to him about stroke because he believes in it, and he raises up and shoots it high, and it's been an unbelievable weapon for us, and he's extremely confident with it now.
Did you have any original qualms about how it would translate to ACC competition?
How his would? Yeah. His shooting?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, I just thought, you know, when he came in that summer before his freshman year when we were practicing, you know, last year, last summer, you know, he's shooting the ball against our veteran big guys and stepping out and making shots and making plays. And so, you know, you just didn't want to mess with it. You know, the last guy who had his shot technique messed with is Markel Fultz, and now his shoulder's broken or something, right? So darn if we're going to mess with anybody's stroke. But Lou, he shot it great playing against our veteran big guys, and it was, you know, you go watch him in high school, that's how he's played, and he's always been able to stretch the floor and shoot it. Obviously his percentages are scary. You know what helps him with that release? I don't see the hitch. I love the high release. The high release helps him shoot over the top of a lot of length and make what is maybe a crowded shot not so crowded, because he gets it up over the top of everybody. And so I kind of infatuated with the high release than the little hitch at the top.
The free throws, I mean, it's kind of like Luke May shooting under 60.
Yeah, he just needs to calm down a little bit. He's such an anxious guy. One of the things I talk to him about is, you know, you got 10 seconds on the foul line. You know, maybe get your breath for 5 or 7 seconds. You don't have to shoot it in three. And of course, that is a tough environment to shoot him the other night. But he'll be very good from there, like Martin has gotten good from the line in time.
Some of the comments of Mike Bray talking about John Mooney, 14 for his last 20 from the three-point line for a very cool 70%. John Mooney spent a couple of moments answering questions from the media yesterday as well.
Not lately. You know, it's really a testament to Matt, TJ, and Rex getting in there, probing, you know, getting the D to kind of commit to them and then kicking out. And I've been open, I've been hitting shots. And, it feels good. It
does. So many people, first thing they notice is the hitch in your shot. Mm-hmm. Have you had people throughout your career try to change that, like coaches try to change?
Really, really no. It's kind of just how I've always shot the ball. You know, people say it's unorthodox, but, you know, I don't really think there's one way to shoot it. As long as, you know, you're putting the reps in, then it's going in, then that's the only thing that matters.
John, as you've eclipsed more and more personal highs over the last month or so, how, if at all, has your confidence in your game changed?
I've always been a confident guy, but, you know, when you get some wins and when you're playing a lot, confidence goes up, and it's a lot of fun. But, you know, you got to continue to get better, got to continue to find ways to help the team win in as many ways as I can.
Coach Bray said he likes your high release. That's what he likes about your shot. Did you always shoot it that high? Was that the first way you started?
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of how I was always shot the ball. My dad, you know, just kind of took me at a young age to always shoot it. You know, just getting reps in the gym, you know, all the time, every day. And that's kind of how I've always shot, yeah.
What's going through your head when you hit six straight three-pointers at North Carolina?
Definitely feels good. It's pretty cool. But again, you just gotta
start to wonder how many in a row, how many.
Yeah, something like that. But no, it's definitely a lot of fun. Again, it's a testament to Matt and our guards, Rex and TJ, of, you know, finding me in my spots and, you know, just been really confident knocking it down.
This situation in the free throw line, coach just said that you just need to relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Just let it come to you.
Yeah, no, that's it. I got in with Coach Ayers yesterday and kind of just smoothed some things out. But, you know, again, it's just getting there and knocking them down. That's the bottom line.
I'd imagine a place like that, once you missed one.
It's pretty loud in there,
second
yeah.
Second one. And
yeah, it was.
Once your streak really started with this three-point line, when DJ was out with the lineup, did the extra minutes help, like your rhythm and your confidence on the court, and just being able to work up a sweat?
Yeah, and I think so. I think when you get in a rhythm early in the game, it kind of carries over for the remainder of the 40 minutes. I think that's been beneficial to me personally. And then again, when you're in that rhythm, you kind of just think every shot's going to go in, and that's been my mindset.
Some of the comments of John Mooney, hopefully red hot from the three-point line tomorrow against Boston College. Sean, in the opening hour, we played Mike Bray answering a question. Is this a must-win for his basketball team? He didn't want to go there. No coach wants to say those dreadful words, this is a must-win. But as non-members of the Irish basketball team, is this a must-win?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it. They're not getting to the NCAA tournament if they don't win tomorrow. Their chances are already really slim, and they absolutely have to go to Boston College and win tomorrow, just like they have to win Monday against Miami as well. There's no doubt about it. It's must win all the way.
I agree. Or you better win at Virginia. That's been tough, I mean, when you've had Connaughton and Grant, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and just kind of going back to Mooney and Jogo a little bit, because we were talking about Jogo there at the end. I think it's important that fans and even media and whoever don't give up on Jogo, because, you know, Mooney was still working things out last year. We didn't see very much of Mooney, and before games, when we were at home games, we would always see him after the team had kind of gone back to the locker room. He was out there taking more shots, working on his shot, continuing to put it up there, and look what he has become now. And, I mean, talk about his free throw. I mean, he's shooting 53% from the free throw line and almost 53% from three-point range. It's amazing. And so, again, I just think that this is kind of part of how things go in Mike Bray's program. Don't give up on Nick Jogo just because we're not seeing it right now. There's still a long way to go before next year rolls around, and because of the way this team is made up, there's a very good chance that Nick Jogo could really be an integral part of next year's team.
You know, you're exactly right about Mooney. He was the guy we watched in practice hit threes last year. Didn't see him on the floor a whole lot. And that's why I feel like I always have to say, Sean, when we watch Jogo shoot during media sessions, I mean, he's a very, very good three-point shooter. It just hasn't occurred in games. And, you know, I kind of feel like, in a roundabout way, we said the same thing about Brandon Wimbush in fall and spring practice, where he looked so good, but it just didn't translate to game situations.
Yeah.
And it just takes guys longer than others. So
that's exactly right. And so, I mean, this is the ACC. It's not high school or even AAU or whatever I guess he was in Canada. So it's not, I don't know if it's AAU up there, but you know what I'm saying. You know, so there's still work to be done. And just, again, just because we're not seeing it now doesn't mean we're not going to see it. Just think about Martinus Gebben a couple years ago, what we saw from him then and what we've seen from him this year.
Yeah, I don't think it's AAU, it's A-A-U up there in Canada. Organization. All right, how about a quick thought on Mishawaka basketball tonight, 7:30 or so against John Glenn in an NIC matchup from the Cave. Sean will have the call tonight, and I'm betting there's going to be some glorious color commentary as well.
Yes, that's right.
Vince D'Addario
will be here. Before too long, it was an interesting matchup against Wawasee a couple nights ago. Both teams were playing a lot of zone defense, and we didn't see a ton of scoring. And the final score was 41-31, and it seemed like half the points came in the fourth quarter. The way things worked out, they were both kind of grinding on each other a little bit. And I asked Ron Heklinski, the Mishawaka head coach, if he expects to see as much zone tonight from John Glenn as he saw from Wawasee. And he said, well, if they watch the film, they probably will, because Wawasee managed to slow him down a little bit. But they got out and ran a little bit in the fourth quarter. And it should be a really good matchup, though. The Falcons are 12-6 overall, 7-3 in the NIC. And they're tied for fourth place with Washington in the NIC. And they actually, their biggest win of the season was against Washington, who been ranked at the top of 3A for a good part of this season. So they've had a good year, but they've lost their last couple coming into tonight to Adams and to St. Joe as well. And then Mishawaka has won six of their last eight games coming into tonight. They're in sixth place, so a win here would kind of move them up into a logjam type situation in that fourth, fifth place in the NIC standings, which would be really good for Mishawaka based on the last couple of seasons.
It's easy to get lost in the shuffle in the NIC boys basketball standings without divisions. It seems like there's like 50 teams when you look at the standings.
Well, that's right. And when you think about the disparity in enrollment in these schools, like you look at Bremen, for example, compared to Adams or Riley or any of these schools. I mean, there's a pretty good difference. Riley obviously is leading the pack at 9-0, but then you got St. Joe at 9-2, Marion at 7-2, John Glenn and Washington both at 7-3, and then Mishawaka at 6-3, right ahead of Penn, who's 6-4. So it's all those are all the teams with the winning records in the NIC right now coming into tonight.
And Sean, we should mention we'll know Mishawaka's sectional route on Sunday.
Yes, we will. The sectional pairings will be announced Sunday, and that's going to begin at 5 o'clock, and it's going to be at IHSAATV.org. And you know they moved the sectionals around this year because Washington did go down to 3A. So as far as the Mishawaka sectional, Mishawaka is going to be hosting the sectional here in a couple weeks. LaPorte, Mishawaka, Penn, Adams, Clay, and Riley are all in this sectional. So there are only six teams in this particular sectional. That means two teams are going to get a first-round bye. So we'll all be watching what happens when that draw comes out Sunday night.
All right, very good. And you'll hear the Mishawaka Cayman in the sectional on 96.1 FM WSBT. But tonight, it's John Glenn and Mishawaka. Vince and Sean will have the call right around 7:30 here on WSBT Radio. I'll preview tonight's Notre Dame hockey game in probably about 20 minutes. Next, it is rapid fire as Sports Beat rolls on for this Friday from Mishawaka High School in the Compton Family Ice Arena on 96.1 FM WSBT. Abby, thank you very much. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser on 96.1 FM WSBT. Excuse me, I got the hiccup. Sean Stiers at Mishawaka High School. I'm Darren Pritchett at the Compton Family Ice Arena. I should mention tonight, for those of you coming to the hockey game or listening on Z94.3 FM, you're going to have a special treat tonight as Blackhawks anthem singer Jim Cornelison will be here to sing the national anthem at Lefty Smith Rink. And we're gonna bring it to you live on Z94.3 FM because it's always special when we have Jim here in South Bend. So that is one of the extra additions to Whiteout Night as Notre Dame takes on Michigan. I'm sorry, I got the hiccups. This could be a problem for rapid fire. This may not be rapid fire. I don't think I've ever had the hiccups in all my years of broadcasting, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do because I'm going to try to talk through this. Excuse me. No,
right,
I'm not
I'll
drinking anything.
We'll see where we can go. That's very cool. I did not realize that. You're going to have to record that tonight if you can, the national anthem. I always get I think everyone gets a kick out of hearing him sing the anthem.
I promise I have not been to O'Brien's and have not sampled any of the adult beverages. I promise. That is not the hiccups
sure.
I'm dealing with.
Sure, okay. Whatever. It's the popcorn. That's what it is.
Whew. I'll fight through it. We'll get it done.
All right. Let's start some rapid fire. How about an over-under for you? Over-under, 29 combined points for Matt Farrell and TJ Gibbs tomorrow against BC.
I'm going to go over. I'm hoping. I mean, Gibbs had 28 the first time around against BC. So, yeah, I feel like they're going to have a good day offensively. BC can score, so, yeah, I'm going to be positive. I'm going to take the over.
They average right around 32 a game together. I'm going over as well. They combined for 46 when they played Boston College a couple of weeks ago. But, of course, they combined to shoot 15 of 26 in that game, 10 of 18 on three-pointers, which was a stark contrast to what they did against North Carolina the other day when they totaled 19 points and shot just 3 of 15 on their three-pointers. But, I mean, I went back and I was thinking about this. I knew Notre Dame won at Boston College last year, and I'm like, man, it seemed like they kind of struggled. They were down by 10 points at Conti Forum last year at halftime. Mm-hmm. They came back and won by 8. Matt Farrell had 5 three-pointers in that game, so it seems like a gym that he's probably pretty comfortable shooting in. So I'll go the over, and I think they'll be at least around 35 points or so tomorrow together.
I'll take that.
All right.
I'll take that and run. And I would say more, but I'm going to hiccup any second.
Now, if that happens, if those two combine for that amount of points again, how confident are you, let's say scale of 1 to 10, that they will win tomorrow?
Five.
Just a 5?
Because BC's good at home. They've
yeah,
beaten
they are.
Duke, Georgia Tech, Florida State, and Miami. Nothing is a given in this game.
That's absolutely right. I think now, I mean, of course, Jerome Robinson obviously went off last time. I just think that, especially kind of going back to what we were talking about, that Mooney needs to be in the lineup, that we need to see less of the other three, Jogo, Burns, and Torres, because as we saw last time, Boston College can score. You mentioned the good teams they've beaten at home. Notre Dame needs to be probably 80 points or better. So I'll go a little bit higher. I'll say that I'm at a 7. If those two combine for 35 to 40-some points, that Notre Dame, my confidence level is 7, that they will walk out of there with a win.
All right.
Okay, here's an interesting one that I saw this week. We've heard stories about the NFL's drop in TV ratings, but CBSSports.com had a story this week about college football suffering its biggest one-year drop in attendance in 34 years this season. So, scale of 1 to 10, how big a deal do you think that is, that college football suffered such a drop, an average of about 11,000 fans per game across college football, over 1.5 million total. It was down from 2016 to 2017.
I'll give that an 8 because with the cost of tickets now, it is canceling out a lot of families.
Right.
I think also, Sean, it is so much fun to watch a college football game on TV. You get the high definition. You get all the replays right away. I think more teams are trying to show replays at the stadium. Notre Dame showed a lot of replays. But when that instant replay thing is going on, you know, the fans can get restless. You have all that time with timeouts. So I think the video board did wonders for a game at Notre Dame Stadium. But I do think the TV product right now is so good. Now, some of the announcing, I think, has been some of the worst I have seen in years. I mean, I'm being dead serious. Some of the football,
you're right. Especially
play-by-play
on the ESPN
and analysts,
networks, yeah.
It's horrible.
Exactly.
It is absolutely horrible. And I guess it's, I guess when we were younger, there weren't as many games on. So you had the premier guys. You had Keith Jackson always doing the big Notre Dame-Michigan game, that type of thing. But other than the quality of broadcasting, the TV product is so good now in all the networks. I can see why a lot of fans just want to stay home or maybe have a party at their house and bring the friends over and watch the football game. It is, I think it's such an entertainment value being at your house watching the games on TV that I think it offsets being at the game.
Yeah, I agree. TV is the best place to watch, whether it's the NFL or college. I do agree that it's the best place to watch football. You get all the replays and just all the angles and everything else. Now, we're used to going to Notre Dame games, and it was a major upgrade that they have that, the Jumbotron or the big video screen or whatever you want to call it. That was a major upgrade, I think, this year. It definitely changed the experience at Notre Dame Stadium. But when you look at this article, it's interesting that even places like Alabama, Notre Dame, the big schools across college football, even their student attendance was down. It wasn't just the regular fan. And, I mean, we saw that, really, with the exception of Georgia and USC. We saw pockets of both student section and other parts of the stadium this year that were empty at Notre Dame Stadium. And we saw, you remember there were those games where they were going right down to kickoff trying to sell things out. So it's interesting that it wasn't just Notre Dame. And, I mean, it is across college football. 7% drop overall, 1.7 million, 1,400 per game across college football. And even though the SEC still led everyone in attendance for the 20th straight year, their conference had their worst attendance since 2005, and the ACC was the worst since 1999. So, and I agree, there's a lot of, when you talk about the cost, and I mean, people don't even want to shell out money to go to movies anymore. They'd rather just wait for the videos or Netflix or whatever and watch that at home. So, I mean, I think cost and technology are two big issues because everyone is so addicted to the technology in their pocket, their smartphones and everything else. And I think Notre Dame did some things to try to upgrade connectivity and stuff, but there are still issues with fans wanting to be connected on their phones too.
Sean, just to add on to your conversation, to bring in college basketball, we all know the tradition of Indiana basketball. I saw on Twitter a fan that was sitting in the upper deck at the Assembly Hall for the Indiana-Illinois game the other night, and it's almost unthinkable how parts of the upper deck were empty. I mean, you think back to the glory years of Bob Knight, you couldn't find an empty seat in that facility. Now, I don't know if some of that had to do with students not showing up, but I would assume once the student tickets have been handed out, they open it up to the rest of the public. I could be wrong. I don't know the Indiana ticket policy.
Right.
But just to see Indiana basketball have the number of empty seats. Now, I'm from Illinois, so I can be overly critical. Illinois stinks. And they I don't know why anybody would want to pay to go watch that horrible team right now. But Indiana, back in its glory days, they could play Ferris State. They could play Alaska A&M, and that Assembly Hall was rocking. It was sold out. It is stunning to see the reaction of fans to Indiana basketball right now. Maybe Miller can bring that back. And I know the Bob Knight departure has a lot to do with this. And I'm sure the ups and downs of the last few years. You can't blame it on Tom Crean anymore.
No.
I was not a Tom Crean fan. I was very critical of him for his lack of defense, philosophy. You can't blame the empty seats on Tom Crean anymore. It's a new era. They're trying to make the best of this situation. But when Indiana basketball has that number of empty seats, wow, that is just absolutely stunning. I'm sure those fans are staying home watching it on high definition to save a few bucks, or maybe they've just lost interest, which is really hard to believe.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. It's interesting. They you notice that as well with basketball, and that is a big arena as well, Assembly Hall. But
well, when Indiana plays a team,
at the same time, you're right. I mean, it's Indiana basketball. You're supposed to be full. Yeah.
I mean, Bruce Weber killed Illinois basketball, and John Gross buried it. So good luck to Brad Underwood trying to fix this, man. I think he can do it, but it's going to take a few years.
Yep. Got a hockey question for you, Darren.
What?
Speaking of
someone hitting the bottle.
I know, right? No more hiccups there, though, right? For the second time this season, Notre Dame and Michigan hockey are doing this Friday-Sunday split home series. So, as someone who is there up close and personal, do you buy or sell this split home and home format that they're doing this year?
Are you trying to get me fired? Because if I give my honest answer, it probably will not be the popular answer for my Notre Dame hockey bosses.
Yeah. Well,
let me just say this.
Okay.
From what I understand, in January and again this weekend, we're playing a home-and-home with Michigan, and I believe it had something to do with student attendance in that early January series with students being away that was going to limit the student section, so that's why they split it up. But here's the thing. Ann Arbor and South Bend is close enough to play Friday, Saturdays, and from what I understand, Michigan prefers to play Friday, Sundays in this situation. I do not. And I'll go ahead and get fired by telling you the reason why I absolutely hate these Friday Sundays. Number one, you lose a day of practice.
Yeah.
Because on Saturday, you're just going to have a morning skate to loosen up the muscles, the legs, get the blood flowing. You're not going to practice hard because you got a game the next day. And it's an earlier start at 5:30 on Sunday. So that's one reason I don't like it. And also, playing on Sunday, you lose a rehab day for the next series that starts on Friday. So that's two reasons why I don't like it. I'll leave my personal preference of wrecking my weekend. I'll leave that out of the conversation. I just think it's tough on the team, and this is the third time we've had this in the second half, and I'm really proud of the guys. They haven't used it as an excuse. You know, they've done pretty well in these spots coming back from the Friday Sunday, so nobody cares what I think, but it is interesting talking to people. I really haven't heard anyone that absolutely loves this. I feel like it can be a hindrance a little bit, but that's just my opinion, and I'll see if I'm back on Sunday or if I'm fired after saying that.
And I mean, to me, just from an outsider perspective, maybe it makes things more interesting if you play the one home game and then you're playing like at Van Andel or something in Grand Rapids or over in Fort Wayne for the other game where you're actually doing something a little bit different. And then that would also would take away that travel day in between, because either way, you're fairly close. And then you talk about what it does to the team. I mean, instead of getting back Saturday night and kind of doing whatever they're going to do on Sunday, they're getting back late Sunday night, and then they've got to get up for classes the right. next day. So it just seems like, I don't know, it's the first year of the Big Ten. Whether or not it continues, I don't know, but I was just interested to kind of get your take on this, since they've done that with both series.
Here's the thing. Yost Ice Arena, no matter the date, the students are going to be there. They have the most amazing student section. And when we played there in that early January game when students weren't back, the student section was absolutely full. So we don't have the same dedication normally from our student section. It gets better in the second half once football is over. But they have an amazing student section at Michigan. So I don't think it really matters when we play up there. They're going to get students.
Makes sense. All right. Question for you. L.A. Lakers rookie Lonzo Ball is charging $199 to autograph any item at a meet and greet this weekend. $199. So my question to you is there anyone you would drop that kind of money for to get an autograph?
Well, my all-time favorite player is John Elway, and I got his autograph when he went into the College Football Hall of Fame, so...
Didn't have to drop any cash, I hope.
Did not,
maybe a little bit for the fee, I don't know.
I actually had a little help getting around that.
That's good.
Doing some media stuff at that time with the
that
Hall of Fame.
Helps.
So I had a little... So that I dodged that bullet. But is there anyone other than him that I would pay $199 for? I got Stan Musial's autograph. He, of course, has passed away. So those are the two that I would really love to have that I do have. Other than that, Sean, gosh, there's a lot of players I really like from hockey, Ray Bourque, Cam Neely from my Bruins, but honestly, I don't think there'd be anybody else. Those would be the only two I'd pay that much for, and I have those.
Seeing a couple of little caveats to this thing.
Uh-oh.
There are no photo opportunities going on and no inscriptions as well for Lonzo Ball. And Beckett Sports is the authenticator. So on top of the $200, if you want it authenticated, you have to pay an extra $10 to get it authenticated. So to me, like if I was going to drop that kind of money, I would rather have the picture, I think, than the autograph. Me and whoever it would be, Roger Staubach or, you know, whoever it would happen to be. If I was going to drop that kind of money, I would be, I think I would less want the autograph as much as a picture with the person.
Selfie time.
That's right. And you can do that too. It's a lot. I just can't imagine. Obviously, this is something that Lonzo Ball's dad cooked up. No surprise. But I can't imagine that a rookie, no better than he is charging that kind of cash for an autograph.
From a personal standpoint, when I was in college, the day at my internship, I got to spend the day with Stan Musial. He sat down next to me. Had there been camera phones then, the picture,
man,
I could have right now. I was just thinking about that. I just want to cry.
I interviewed, he wasn't an idol of mine, but I interviewed Goose Gossage way back in the day. And same deal. It's like, this is like in a Walmart out in the sticks someplace, but I'm sitting there with Goose Gossage, and it's like, you know, I didn't have a smartphone or anything like that back then, but that would have been pretty cool to have it as well.
I can see Goose Gossage sitting in an RV, Clark, at the Walmart.
That's right.
Griswold reference, sorry.
Yep, no, I got it. That's all I've got for rapid fire.
All right, I think we're behind on breaks anyway. We got to get out of here for a second. I'll set up the hockey game next on WSBT. It is 6:53 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Sean Stiers coming to you from Mishawaka High School. Cayman basketball on WSBT radio tonight. Right around 7:30, it'll be Mishawaka taking on the John Glenn Falcons. I'm Darren Pritchett at the University of Notre Dame, the Compton Family Ice Arena, where it is number one Notre Dame and number 18 Michigan in Big Ten action. Notre Dame is 22-6-1 overall in the Big Ten in their inaugural season. They are 15-3-1-1. Meanwhile, Michigan, an overall record of 14-13-3, 9-10-3-2 in the Big Ten. The Irish have swept the season series so far from Michigan. The Irish won in Ann Arbor January the 5th, 2-1 on goals by Andrew Ogilvie and Matt Hellickson. 2 days later in South Bend, the Irish once again beat Michigan 2-1, and same two goal scorers, Andrew Ogilvie and Matt Hellickson. Tonight, the 138th all-time meeting between Notre Dame and Michigan, many of those games in the old CCHA. So what's at stake for Notre Dame? Honestly, they wrapped up the Big Ten regular season title, so they've got the trophy on display here tonight for fans to take a look at. And right now, I think they're playing for seeding in the NCAA tournament and just wanting to continue to build on their good play. They're 6-3-1 in the second half. Of course, they had a 16-game winning streak earlier this year. And right now, they would be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. There is not a regional close by, so honestly, there might be a couple of sites they may go to. They probably won't go to the one up north in either North Dakota or South Dakota because of the NCHC schools that are highly ranked, like St. Cloud State and Denver. So Notre Dame could be going to, like, Pennsylvania, Allentown. So they're just trying to stay on the one line right now. They're number two in the pairwise. St. Cloud State jumped them when Notre Dame lost to Ohio State on Monday. For Michigan, they're on the outside looking in, trying to get back inside the NCAA tournament bubble, and it would be a big help to sweep Notre Dame this weekend. The Wolverines also trying to lock up either a 2 or a 3 seed in the Big Ten tournament. The Irish ranked number one in the country for a 6th consecutive week. We'll wrap up Sports Beat next, 6:56 at WSBT. Sean Stiers, have a great call tonight.
And you too over there at the Compton, Darren.
Thank you, sir. John Glenn and Mishawaka at 7:30 on WSBT Radio. Irish hockey against Michigan on Z94.